Welcome to the Enterprise Mobility Roundup podcast, brought to you by Blue Fletch. We discuss technology topics related to Android and workforce devices and how they intersect with business and mobility.
This is Brett Cooper. I'm joined by Richard Makerson. We are talking about iOS versus Android in the enterprise. This is a question that's been around for a decade plus, decade and a half. I think iOS came out in 07, 08. Android started really picking up traction around 2011 in the enterprise. We've seen a lot of changes over the last decade. And we're going to talk through, I think, some of the factors that we've seen and just give our summary of the iOS versus Android. So I guess, Richard, just to contextually start, I know you started doing iOS work in 2008, I think right when it came out and started playing around with it. When do you remember Android coming out or actually starting to look at that or evaluate that in earnest?
It's probably 2010, probably 2 years into iOS development. Steve Jobs stood on the stage and held up that iPhone. You know, everybody got excited. Everybody wanted to understand how to write iOS apps. And if you remember, those initial apps, or if you want to develop on iPhone, need to be HTML5. Like, it wasn't even native. And so it took a while before they came out with Xcode, brought out the same tool sets that they used to build their applications and made that available for the development community.
Yeah, early on was the App Store was really big. So people started to make money and get early on that train. All right, so we're going to go through a couple areas of rubrics just for our experiences of the iOS versus Android landscape. The first one we talked about, I think when we thought about the outline or the key areas, was the hardware and device landscape. And then I think there's sort of on the Apple side of the house, you know, what's your experience around the hardware on the Apple side of the house?
It's always consistent, right? Like, Apple is the only company that makes Apple devices. And so you're going to get a consistent experience. It's going to be the same device for everyone, no matter who you are. You could be the largest company in the world. You could be a consumer that walks into the Apple store. Apple controls that user experience. So the devices that are available online in the Apple store are the only Apple devices that are available. But Android, on the other hand, manufacturer can get a license and, you know, make an Android device or just download Android and make their own device. So there's a plethora of choices and flavors of Android and Android devices. Some devices are full Android and some aren't. And so, you know, it allows companies like your Samsungs, your Honeywells, your Zebras, Datalogic, and so forth to, you know, add different things to their devices to fit a specific market.
All right, so Apple, you get what you get, whereas Android, you get whatever the manufacturers do. And if you don't like it, you go find another manufacturer.
Or manufacture it yourself.
Manufacture it yourself. Roll your own OS. We've done that before. And I guess the other piece on that would be just form factors. Apple has, it's got the phones, a couple different size phones. Mm-hmm. It's got tablets. It's got the watches. Now they have, Vision and Apple TV. Well, Apple TV might be around. I don't know if it's going to go the way of HomePod, but I think those are your options. Whereas, what are your options on Android for what it goes in and what it runs?
There's a lot of things that run Android, like behind the scenes. So you got your mobile devices, your tablets. Like Apple, they have an Android Wear device, and there's other set-top boxes. You have your Chromecast. There were a few headless Android devices that we used in the past that has helped us either on clients with engagements or just for conferences, just to have something that can interact with our devices and we can have a unique experience. So you can put Android into whatever device you want to put it into because it's an open OS, but it's also available for folks to play in where, you know, Apple is closed. It's only going to run on Apple devices unless you do a very heavy, heavy lift and put it in something else. And even then you can get a cease and desist from Apple because that's not how the OS was intended for use.
Yeah. And I think we were talking about this the other day. I think Apple has, 27% of global market share now, which we seem pretty high until you looked at Android, which has 72% on the cell phone side. But that doesn't include a lot of the headless devices or things where people are just embedding Android as the OS for
Yeah, there's probably many displays or terminals or experiences that you see that has Android behind it or Android in some form or fashion.
Yep, and I guess the next category we talked about was accessories, so things around the accessories of the ecosystem of the devices. And I know this is sort of a related or adjacent to hardware, but what's your experience around accessories or the add-ons for the different options, iOS versus Android?
Yep. With iOS, there, you know, you do have accessories. There's a third-party market for them. Most things that interact with Apple need to be certified by Apple. There's certification processes with Android and Google as well. However, because it's open, because you can see what's going on behind the scenes, if you have an idea, that allows you to explore that idea and either bring it to market or to test it. But, you know, in our world, in enterprise Android, if I can manufacture my device, I can start to manufacture the experiences and the accessories around that. And I'm not pigeonholed, or I don't have to worry about bounds that, a company like Apple may put on what I can and can't do, because they want to control and make sure they have a certain level of experience or expectation from an end user.
Yeah, and I guess that makes me think about the intrinsically safe devices for mining and gas, mm-hmm. where if Apple, you got to buy a giant case for it, but there's a bunch of manufacturers that sell specific hardware for oil and gas, or even for healthcare. I think Zebra's got a whole line dedicated around healthcare that has certain types of plastics that are easier to clean with commercial grade healthcare cleaning products.
Where yep.
You have to put a case on an Apple device, and then you're costing twice as much at that point in time. So I think the next thing, and you talked a bit about this, the OS running on different things. What are the other factors of the OS for Apple versus the OS for Android?
So, you know, just in the enterprise sense, this is something I just thought of. We didn't talk about this earlier, is, you know, the fact that Android is open. Like, if I have an issue, if you wanted to go deep enough in the OS and see like what actually happened or what's actually going on, we can do that. And there's been times we've had to do that to solve some just really wild problems. And, that's been beneficial. It's beneficial to us. To be able to serve our customers, it helps our customers not have to wait weeks or sometimes months for a response or to understand like what's actually happening in my ecosystem or interrupt my business. And so that's huge. With iOS, it's closed, but then, you know, over the years, you know, with iOS's focus on user privacy, they've taken away some of the private APIs that has allowed, you know, developers to have flexibility. And so, you know, over the years, that flexibility, you know, has gone away. You know, new features have come, but in the enterprise, I think flexibility is key. Not every business is run the same, and, you know, you need to do things differently. And sometimes you just need to be able to do things in a pinch. And when you don't have that flexibility, it can be extremely frustrating, especially in a pressure situation when, you know, you're trying to do the art of the impossible that feels like nobody else in the world is doing, and I need to solve it yesterday.
Yeah. All right. So if you get in pinch, call Rick. He'll look at the ASOP source code and tell you what's wrong with it. I guess with AOSP versus GMS on the Android side, can you give your 30-second overview or thought on those two flavors of Android?
Yes. So with ASOP, you know, that's Android open source. And so it's pretty much vanilla Android. And so you can build your experience on top of that. So if I was someone like Samsung, I can take the open source Android and I could build, you know, my UI on top of that and present a Samsung experience on all my Samsung devices, although it's still Android. With GMS, that's where you're going to get the Google services. So you'll get the Play Store and access to download apps that they've made available, and they scan and make sure that nothing nefarious is in the Play Store. This is where you're going to get your Gmail and some of your other services like your Google Vision or some of the AI things that they offer. So It's Android with, you know, Google sprinkled on top.
But those manufacturers, to be GMS certified, you have to go to Google and they check all the boxes that you're following their rules,
yep.
Right?
So there's some bounds that they, you know, put there that they want you to do and don't do and you have to do in order to make it GMS certified. I think the only thing that we've come up to, which hasn't been a big thing for us, is when we think about like reauthentication and using biometrics, being able to interact with that biometric module, just being restricted to how Google wants that implemented to be a GMS device, is probably the least flexible thing that we've run up against recently. But that's a very niche user experience that we're trying to provide. So on one hand, I understand it. And on the other hand, because it's Google, you have, you know, other companies out there like Esper that offer, Android OSs, and they'll customize it for you. They'll provide security updates, I think up to like 7 or 8 years. And so like you have options. And so, that's nice as well.
Got it. And I think that parlays well into the next topic, which was experience. I think the experience on the device, and I think you had, what did you call it, the three E's of Apple?
Yeah, there might be four, but Apple's going to have a consistent experience. They want everyone to feel the same thing, have the same like look and feel in apps, because that's just going to make it less. It's going to create less friction when using the device and should bring you joy. They want to control the environment. So how things interact, being able to hit do not disturb on one device and it syncs to all devices, or I can get messages on my phone and computer, but I don't get them on my tablet. So that environment and how things connect to one another, they do a really good job of that. And then expectation. Because everything is relatively so locked down that my expectation, is similar. Like I know what I'm going to get with Apple. Whereas with Android, it's a bit of choose your own adventure, which for some people that's nice. They want to build their own adventure. They don't, for the season of life they're in, it may be different for if they're using Android in their teens versus their 20s. Now they're a little bit older. But for some folks, they might not want to do that research. They might not want too many options. They may just want, just give me a path and I'll stay in my lane. And so, in the enterprise, once again, going back to that word flexibility, is super important. And so, controlling the experience, controlling the environment, controlling the expectation, controlling everything, which is that fourth E, doesn't provide flexibility, which makes it tough in the enterprise.
Yep. This is sort of a add-on, but app ecosystem. I know we talked a bit about apps, and I feel like there's pretty much parity now, but like, what's your thoughts around the ecosystem, and maybe historically how that's different than what it is now?
Yeah, historically, I remember that anytime a new application came out, it was iOS first. And if it had any success or, people started to gravitate towards it, then eventually it came out for Android. But either I'm too old and I don't know any of the cool apps that come out nowadays, but it feels like, when a service is launched, it's on multiple devices. And I'd even say it's Android, iOS, and web. You think about some of the big social media apps, some of the big consumer or financial applications, like when we had the Bitcoin craze, wallets were coming out on both devices, on the web. It was about accessibility. I think the tooling has gotten better. I think the resources, the development community has gotten better. And so it's less of this synchronized line of, okay, I got to do this first and then I can do this other thing. No, I can do three platforms at once. And, we feel confident and comfortable that we can deliver that and that experience.
What's your thoughts on that? Just the hybrid development versus developing for those specific platform experiences?
It's getting tougher to do just because there's so many new features on the devices. I think before, when it was just an app and maybe you had a camera or a microphone or you leverage GPS, like those are things that are common around those experiences. But when you start going deeper into the OS and now I can have these micro apps, whether it's a like a messaging app or a sticker app, now you're able to build machine learning modules. Having a hybrid platform that's able to be easy to use and develop for, but deliver a consistent experience across both app ecosystems is just getting, it's getting tougher to do. And, you know, it was always, you know, slightly painful if you had a hybrid tool that you're using and, you know, a customer came out and they wanted to use a new feature, but you had to wait for that hybrid platform to update or to support this. And, you know, maybe they supported it on iOS, but they didn't support it on Android. And so you're always, feels like you're behind the eight ball. So, you know, the tools still work, but I think once you get deeper and you're using more of the device, the OS, and some of these newer features, it's just, it just takes more work to do the same thing you can do when, if you just go to both platforms.
All right. So you're still an advocate of not being hybrid in 2023.
No, there are certain types of apps and certain windows you can stay in, but if you're going deep into, the device or the OS, like the longer you support it, the harder it is, especially when you start to update and you're depending on libraries and they change and you got to go back and change, you know, code because now the actual development language has essentially changed up under you. So it's a tough slog. You know, I've had, you know, great wins doing hybrid, but I've also had many late nights. And I'm surprised I still have hair on my head because of some of the issues we continue to run up against.
Yeah, I guess with that developer experience, maybe can you talk about, as a enterprise software developer, the experience someone can expect on iOS versus Android? What are the pros and cons there?
I think they're getting more consistent. I think it's easier to develop across both. When you think of some of the new tools that they've released, when you think about Swift, it felt more like JavaScript or Java than, you know, Objective-C when it first came out, and you got Swift UI, and then Kotlin is headed in the same direction. And so as a developer, like when you just think about just doing like just the app part of it, they're closer together than where they started out, you know, 10, 12 years ago. And so, you know, that makes it easier. But, you know, when you want to dive deep, I know there's one big company that we're working with here where we're actually doing, building machine learning modules on iOS and doing pattern and image recognition in an application. And so going back to the hybrid piece, I couldn't imagine doing that, working with a hybrid library. But, you know, the ecosystem is, you know, consistent and friendly enough to where, you know, our current team has, you know, one person who goes really deep in iOS, but supported by a few others to help think through, like, how do we want to solve that problem? And so I think, you know, having, you know, Kotlin, Swift UI, and, you know, where it's headed being closer together, just makes it more approachable and easier for people to participate and help one another out.
Got it. And then actual like development experience. I think one caveat is if you're going to develop on iOS, you have to have Mac hardware, right?
You have to have Mac hardware, have to use Xcode. There's no getting around that, where you do have a few different IDE options. You could develop on Mac, you can develop on Windows. There's other build libraries. Like if you're thinking about continuous integration, continuous development, CI/CD for the builds, where, you know, for a Mac, at some point it's going to get built on a Mac, whether that's in the cloud or sitting under somebody's desk or in a closet. So yeah, definitely more options, more IDEs, more flavors when you think about Android versus iOS.
Yeah, so back to the flexibility. The next category we had was management. So the management tools, management of devices, which I think now typically boils down to EMM and BY, and I guess the MDM capabilities. What's your experiences around that?
Yeah, so you know, we were talking earlier, and I said for iOS, as long as it's a personal device, whether it's BYOD, company-owned personal use, or you know, you're managing a device for your kids, like, that's very straightforward. It's easy to do. But if you're an enterprise and you have, you know, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of devices deployed, and you got a mix of modern apps, legacy apps, you know, you got, you know, IBM mainframe supporting, you know, systems, and you're trying to do things on mobile devices, like, you need flexibility. And, you know, sometimes you might need to have flexibility around granting permissions or being able to do something very nuanced because the environment is unique or locked down from a security perspective. And so you have many more options when you think about managing Android devices. You know, Google's come out with Android, the enterprise APIs, but they've also, it looks, from my point of view, like, they extended and they're going to continue to allow legacy EMMs or MDMs to keep their custom DPCs, their device policy controllers, because they recognize the flexibility that enterprises do need to have, and that, you know, that flexibility is only going to occur on a certain device set, which is usually
company-owned, dedicated.
Yeah, dedicated single-purpose device.
Yep. I think the last point we talked about was security, and I feel like iOS definitely had a head start here and has done a lot around security and especially consumer privacy. What's your thoughts on how that impacts that iOS experience versus Android experience in the enterprise?
Yep. So I can talk about my personal iOS experience because that's what I use personally. It helps when I have to be Geek Squad for my family, and, you know, we have that, you know, consistent expectation, experience, ecosystem. I can support that if my mom or dad calls me. But going back to user privacy, there are times when I plug up my phone to my computer, which gets plugged up every day to charge, and it doesn't charge because I didn't unlock the device. And, you know, Apple's trying to protect me from myself, and I just want to charge my freaking phone. You know, so, you know, Apple wants to be known for protecting user privacy. And when I think about user, I think about consumer in parentheses in front of that user, not enterprise user. But, you know, Google does, you know, a ton to protect devices, whether it's their Play Protect, whether they're scanning apps in the app store, whether they're scanning, you know, this is one of the reasons why you probably want to have a GMS device, you know, scanning devices to make sure nothing nefarious is going out there, but also providing the flexibility to, you know, push, you know, private applications to make sure developers in an enterprise scenario are able to get permissions on a device. And, you know, the fact that you can manufacture, or OEMs can manufacture devices and make certain APIs open because they know that, you know, nobody's going to carry around this, you know, big pistol grip $2,000 Android device as a personal device, you know, make things available like the serial number, which, you know, Apple doesn't make available anymore. And most of the Android consumer phones don't make available. But when we talk about enterprise Android, you know, that's important for, you know, device support, support out in the field, knowing who's doing what, when, and where, and where my fleet of devices are. You know, that simple thing used to be table stakes, you know, when, you know, I started my career. Now, you know, it's something that you have to ask for, and sometimes you don't get.
Yeah, some of the manufacturers on the consumer side. Yeah. Yeah, you got to manage 100,000 devices. You have an issue, find the device with serial number. Yeah, and Apple, good luck. All right. So in summary, I'm going to use the word you said a bunch of times, but flexibility. It sounds like the key points, flexibility of Android in the enterprise is going to give you a lot more capabilities, a lot more management flexibility. There's downsides with that to come around the management, on the consumer side, to your point, it's a lot harder to fix and resolve issues, but it's also a lot easier to have a consistent enterprise experience. Mm-hmm. So if you need flexibility and you have, different use cases, Android is the way to go in the enterprise. iOS, if it's a company owned personal carry device, iOS is still a spectacular device, great speed, performance, the experience is top notch. But from a standpoint of company owned shared devices, company owned dedicated devices, Android is the way to go. Any other key takeaways or thoughts?
I had thought of one and I forget it just that quick when you were doing your outro. The other thing I would say, with Android devices, the fact that with these rugged devices, when you think about a device that could literally be in use 24 hours a day, if it's supporting 3 8-hour shifts, iOS devices aren't built for that.
Yeah. Swappable. Yeah. Android, the Zebras, Honeywells, DataLogic, swappable batteries, the ruggedization, focus on, mission specific products.
Yeah. iOS is built for you to use maybe 8 to 10 hours a day, and then it sits on a charger if you've unlocked it and not protecting you from yourself.
Nice. Excellent. Richard, thank you for walking us through this today. Appreciate it. As always, if anyone has questions or feedback, reach out to us at info@bluefledge.com and feel free to like or comment below. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Enterprise Mobility Roundup podcast. If you enjoyed the discussion, please take a few moments to rate us. If you would like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe. To learn more about mobility topics or submit any questions, visit us at bluefledge.com.